position where you're, you know, it's, first of all, it's more comfortable for you because you don't have to make all the decisions, and second of all, you don't get all the blame, you know.
Yeah.
Have you thought about that as an alternative?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
So when are you going to do it there, Larry?
Hey, we have a co-founder, we have Tom Schaefer, we have Paul Lee that all makes decisions for this. And the thing that was just printed in the paper is completely stupid. And I can't wait for people to read the outcome of this.
Now, when is your arraignment?
April 4th.
Hey, that's right after my arraignment on April 3rd.
Oh, yours is April 3rd?
Yeah, I'm going to be arraigned for doing my Heil Kron salute. supposedly disrupting a public meeting. I don't think so.
Yeah,
so this is April 4th. It's probably at around 8:15 or 8:30 in a courtroom.
Yeah, 8:15.
And what are you accused of?
Extortion.
Is that felony or misdemeanor?
That's a felony.
So you were actually taken to jail, and how many days were you held in jail?
I was only there about 4 hours.
And then you were bailed out?
I bonded out.
Now, did you actually lose $500 in it?
Yes, we did.
So nobody wanted to put up a $5,000 bond, I guess?
Well, we were going to, and, you know, I didn't feel like sitting there waiting.
I gotcha.
So I had the extra money, and I got out.
Yeah, well, this of course violates my cardinal rule, which is never bail out if you're going to lose money. But you know, I can appreciate that other people don't necessarily follow.
Well, I had a lot of other things I had to take care of, and
you needed to get out.
Right now, it's what happened. If anybody wants to believe it, that's fine. They can believe whatever the hell they want to.
Have you experienced any repercussions from this? Or people less?
No, I've had a lot of people tell me they think this boy is so full of shit, they don't even know what the hell he's trying to pull, because he's told a lot of these people the thing that he ain't saying in the newspaper. So he really fucked up. He told our attorney all the deal about the bicycle, how the insurance paper was being filed. You know what? Squirrel's the one that messed up, not me.
Well, you know, I always hate to see it when people who have been, and to some extent, comrades, fall out.
Yeah, exactly.
And I always encourage you to avoid dissing folks if you can. I mean, I diss them. I'll diss the politicians up the yin yang, no question about it. And I'll continue to do it. But I've had similar problems with activists. You and I have, you know, had disagreements as well.
Yeah, we have.
But you know, it's so bad when we begin fighting among each other.
Exactly.
You know, it'd be nice to find another way. And I guess the concern a lot of us have, I mean, there is, I know I talked to Carl Wilson of Friends of Camp Paradise. He was very concerned that you are in fact being harassed by the authorities. Do you feel that's the case?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. You know, when somebody, one thing about this, the law that I don't think they even understand their goddamn selves, is when you're made, when, like if I made a charge against you, Robert, okay, saying you're harassing me, all right, they're supposed to be, they got to have two sides of this story before they can make any charges against anybody. I have never been asked by a detective anything of this sort. I guess they've had the warrant out for me. Now, this is what's so damn funny. They've had warrant out for me since February.
That's interesting.
You know, and how many times did I see Celie? How many times were we down at City Hall?
Why do you think that suddenly this warrant was called in and enforced?
I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, I have heard other people charge you with
charges than this.
You know, not extortion, but threats. And you're a person who loses his temper. You can't deny it. You've gotten angry at different times.
Exactly, but I've never threatened or bodily hurt no one. No.
I don't know if I would care to debate that in a public forum with your liberty at stake. So I will let that one pass. But I think that is, you know, have you agreed to anything like anger management classes? Has that ever been proposed to you?
Nope.
No. Well, I propose it to you. I mean, I will. You know, you need a lot. No, it's. I don't want to sound like some, you know, weird radio shrink here. But I think it's important for. And I'm not these charges are not primarily a matter of concern for me particularly.
Yeah.
You know, my concern is, though, that I have seen you been in disputes with people in the past, and I would like to see a mechanism in the camp set up so that somebody else can come in and mediate. And would that be something you would be open to?
Probably. We got a mediator, and it's Tom Schaefer.
Okay, so if people in the camp have a problem with you, they can go to Tom, and Tom can kind of sit down with you guys.
Exactly.
Because, see, it's sometimes rather, it's sort of a little bit daunting to come up to Larry Templeton, who's, you know, not only are you an outspoken individual, not only are you a person with some prestige, but, you know, you've got a sharp temper, and I've got to say it, you sometimes say things that perhaps you maybe wish you hadn't at different times. You know, that's just my experience with you. And therefore, you know, it's sometimes the person who wants to talk to you can feel kind of, I don't know, you know, and they have to run to the DA instead, if you understand what I mean.
Well, I understand that, too.
And if there's a person like Tom Shaver who can actually stand there in the middle and, you know, sort of kind of mellow things out, I'm just looking for other alternatives. That's my deal here.
Yeah, okay.
We're talking to Larry Templeton of Camp Paradise. Larry, anything you want to say about the Santa Cruz Service Corps to the public as far as what you're offering, what you're looking for? I know you can be reached at
423-8636.
423-8636 if you have any kind of work. What kind of work are you looking for?
We've been doing all kinds of lawn work, tree work, hauling, moving people. Mm-hmm. We have a box trailer now. We have a flatbed trailer. We have our pickup. We have some vans. If people's moving or they need their yard cleaned up or anything, we have a full crew that's ready to go. And we have lawnmowers. We have our weed eaters. We're ready to go. Anybody that needs any work done, we're here.
Hey, 423-863. And April 4th, I mean, probably you would like to see folks in court supporting
you. Yes, I would.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the air, Larry. And, hey, feel free to get in touch with me later to tell me any little details that you weren't able to discuss on the air.
You bet.
Hey, thanks.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Larry Templeton. I'm Robert Norris. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We have about 50 minutes left in Bathrop's Piers Broadsides here on Free Radio. Call-in number is 427-3772. I was reading a story about half an hour ago about Sacramento and the harassment of homeless people there. And I want to continue reading that story. If I can find the right page. The Lower Parkway is being used for people's lives, said Gary Cox, a Presbyterian minister who serves as liaison to the River Campers for Loaves and Fishes, the 12th Street charity that provides services for Sacramento's homeless population. Cox once brought a Christmas tree out to camp. He said he has stayed overnight on the river a half dozen times in an effort to get to know the campers better. Bill McManus, who has camped along the river for 17 years, said he considers the parkway his home. This ranger told me the other day, "You're on my river." McManus said, "I've been here for 17 years. How can it be yours?" McManus, who travels with three German Shepherd mixed dogs and one Husky mix, maintains the parkway is safe despite the large homeless population. "We're no different than any other community," McManus said. "If you look in the paper, you'll see a lot more rapes and murders in the outside community than you do here." Leah Brooks, chairwoman of the Sacramento Area Bicycles Advocates, has a different perspective. She commutes through the parkway every day from downtown to her home in Gold River. "I avoid stopping at least until I get to the H Street Bridge because I always assume that there's somebody hiding in the bushes or living in the bushes," she said. Once a man tried to throw a large stick into the spokes of her bike as she passed. In another incident, Brooks' husband was sprayed with mace or a similar substance by someone standing along the path. "I've had groups of people blocking the bike bridge in the past," Brooks said. "I've had groups of men having parties in the middle of the bridge. I've had people literally passed out." Advocates for the homeless acknowledge the parkway population includes people who are there for reasons other than lack of shelter beds. Some are mentally ill, others want to stay with a boyfriend or girlfriend, or are using drugs or alcohol, and some just don't like being around a big group of people. Jim Gravely, 41, said he's been camping along the parkway for 6 years. He said he doesn't go to homeless shelters. "I don't like to be governed, and you've got to deal with all those other groups," said Gravely, who was playing horseshoes at Loaves and Fishes one afternoon last week. Of course, you have to also consider that homeless shelters are also places where not only is your liberty taken away, but your possessions may be stolen, you may get sick, and you're in a situation with a very, very limited privacy. I add this as an addenda. Several other campers declined to talk. Cox, the Loaves and Fishes liaison, said they are upset and frightened by the February murder of Ken Massey. a popular homeless man who camped under Highway 160. Massey and a companion were shot by a masked gunman as they bedded down. Cox said campers viewed the incident as a sign of rising hostility toward the homeless. But those who advocate clearing the camps from the parkway say the shooting illustrates how dangerous the area is for the campers themselves. We have this thing the county refers to as a natural jewel. It's a cesspool. It's unsafe, complained Bob Slobe, a North Sacramento businessman whose family sold the North Sacramento Parkway land to the county in the mid-1980s for about $2 million. Slobe has made it a crusade to get the county to crack down. He views the current effort as inadequate. Almost every day, Slobe heads out from his office on Slobe Avenue in North Sacramento. Near Costco and the Radisson Hotel, and hikes or runs along the parkway. He carries a digital camera to document the camps and barrages officials with images from his website. On a recent hike, he found a few active camps and numerous old campsites littered with piles of bicycle parts, sleeping bags, clothes, and garbage. In one spot, a red loose-leaf binder lay in the middle of the path. Inside were neatly clipped male pornography pictures enclosed in plastic sleeves. Slobe argues that it's unfair for the county to tolerate massive illegal camping in the portion of the parkway that abuts one of the city's poorest neighborhoods. There should be programmed activities down there every single day of the year, he said. There should be day camps for kids. There should be interpretive services and signage. Without a hint of facetiousness, he offers to donate tents and chemical toilets for homeless camps to be set up in East Portal Park, Curtis Park, Land Park, all in more affluent neighborhoods. Nobody has taken him up on the offer. Sacramento is certainly not the only city that has a homeless camping problem. San Francisco has struggled with illegal camping in Golden Gate Park. Some Santa Cruz councilmen recently caused a stir when they proposed allowing homeless people to get permits to camp in city parks as long as they helped clean them. That, of course, does not really accurately reflect Santa Cruz, but what else is new? Sacramento is unusual in that it has a long strip of relatively wild parkland running the length of the metropolitan area. We do have a beautiful parkway that has lots of forested areas where people can be protected from the weather, said Jan Galloway, homeless program manager of the Sacramento County Department of Human Assistance. It really draws people here. The 460-acre portion of the parkway next to North Sacramento, an area larger than Discovery Park, Ansel Hoffman Park, or Goethe Park, is designated in the 1985 Parkway area as a nature area. Only limited recreation, such as hiking or horseback riding, is allowed, but there is no nature center here. There are no signs directing hikers where to go. Slobe said an overturned chemical toilet once was allowed to lie in the middle of the bike path for 4 months. Well, maybe you could have picked it up, Mr. Slobe. Most of the investment the county has made in the parkway has been made outside the city of Sacramento, said Sacramento Mayor Heather Fargo. Fargo said the city might be willing to get in there and offer some facilities if it could work out a lease agreement with the county, a skateboard park maybe, or disc golf, or even a scenic drive along the river. The county is working on an update of the parkway plan, but is unlikely to allow large-scale active recreation in North Sacramento's portion of the parkway. I would hate to put green grass sprinklers in there, said Ron Suter, director of the county parks department. That area is designated for the deer and the critters. So the deer, the critters, and the upper middle class are the folks who are okay in these areas, but the homeless are not. Thank you very much. Liddick said the department is trying to come up with ideas, but that critics have to be patient. His department, hamstrung by a lack of funding, is struggling to just pick up the garbage. We're not exaggerating when we say we've taken 28 tons of trash out of there since July, Liddick said. Oh, they could always call Camp Paradise in, perhaps. Or maybe work on a Camp Paradise-type solution up in Sacramento. We're trying to make improvements down there. We've added staff. This isn't a problem that's going to be fixed in one day, 1 week, or 1 month. Notice throughout this article, it's not a housing problem. It's not a survival problem. It's a, why can't we have more running parks, disc golf, and touristish type natural services for those with money? A Sacramento homeless activist writes in response to this, it's a shame the extension of shelter at Cal Expo is not approved by the Board of Supervisors. Yes, the warmer weather will lessen the dangers of sleeping outside, but it is against the law to sleep outdoors. That increases dangers almost as dire as the cold. Homeless people are unable to congregate with others to ensure an aura of safety and community, presenting opportunity for conscientious campers to influence unconscientiousness. They are unable to keep their few possessions from confiscation by police. They must regularly go to court, jail, look for another location to sleep, hoping to sleep undisturbed by police sweeps, and are fined for money they may be saving for rent. They are burdened by not being able to loiter near the place they will sleep, making it impossible to spend any daytime daylight time picking up trash. Many homeless people would love to help our community by cleaning up the parkway, and many do, not mentioned in the article. A real serious danger is that people are denied shelter and also are not allowed to sleep without shelter. What are they expected to do? Where are they expected to go? Jail? That's Paula Lamazzi, Sacramento, from the SHOC, Sacramento Homelessness Organizing Committee. And all that's about a story in the Sacramento Bee. And in Las Vegas, things are popping. Here's a story, March 26th. The day after the city and Metro Police cleared out 175 members of homeless camp downtown, Las Vegas Mayor Oscar Goodman said Monday he hoped the ongoing pressure on the homeless population would either compel them to seek services or drive them out of the city. Either they're going to finally ask for help or they're going to get so frustrated they'll leave, Goodman said of the homeless. I'd prefer they ask for help. He added that the cleanup was in the best interests of residents because the camps in recent months had created health hazards around Foremaster Lane and Main Street. But homeless advocates and officials who serve on a regional task force on homelessness said the operation, which cost nearly $11,000, merely served to underscore how far the Las Vegas Valley was from solving the homeless problem. Brother David Boer, a Franciscan friar who provides food and other services to the homeless at the Poverello House, said the cost of the operation could have paid for 3 weeks of shelter at a section of the Salvation Army shelter that closed last September for lack of funds. The loss of beds and shelters around the city during the past year and metro sweeps at other areas together led to the swell of the homeless camp downtown, he said. It's too bad that taxpayer money had to be used for this when much of the problem could have been avoided if there was adequate shelter, he said. Others predicted that the new homeless sweeps that had risen homeless camps that had risen only blocks away from the one that was dispersed on A Street between Washington and Owens Avenues in Las Vegas and under a bridge on Owens west of the Salvation Army. How can the mayor keep saying there's enough beds and the problem is that we don't want them if all these people are sleeping right next to a shelter which they couldn't get into, said Anthony Richards, one of about 60 men and women camped under the bridge Monday. Goodman is asking Metro and city marshals to maintain a presence in the area to, quote, help the homeless. The mayor has insisted there are enough beds, though officials from MASH Village, the Las Vegas Rescue Mission, and the Salvation Army all said Monday their shelters have been full every night. We put our names on the list to get into the MASH tent, but in the end there was no space. Joshua and Rebecca, a couple who declined to give their last names, said Monday they spent Sunday night under the bridge at Owens Avenue west of the Salvation Army. Brenda Dizon, who heads the Shade Tree Shelter for Homeless Women and Children, said the shelter had 33 empty beds Sunday night, but she said she has run into only a handful of women from the sweep, with 10 new women entering the shelter Sunday. Another couple, Bernardo Segura and Dolores Barron, said they did not even seek a shelter bed because local shelters do not allow unmarried couples to stay together. If anybody wants a bed and is willing to abide by the rules, I'll make sure they have a bed if that means going into my own pocket to get them a motel room, Goodman said Monday. That's the mayor. Gary Peck, executive director of the Nevada American Civil Liberties Union, said city officials are lying when they say there is adequate shelter. Peck said homeless people wanting shelter are being turned away. The reason that city officials keep repeating the big lie that there is ample shelter space is because they understand that absent that shelter space or some other designated reasonable location where within the city where these people can go, the homeless have a right to be out there, he said. Tensions are mounting between law enforcement agencies and the ACLU, which says officers are violating the civil rights of the homeless. And we will be inviting the ACLU from Las Vegas to come to the summit May 3rd and 4th. The ACLU has argued that as long as there is not adequate shelter, homeless people cannot be arrested while engaged in life-sustaining activities such as sleeping or eating. Only two homeless people were arrested during Sunday's sweeps. A couple were arrested early in the day near Washington Avenue and Veterans Drive on domestic violence charges after getting into a fight on the street. Alan Lichtenstein, legal counsel to the ACLU, said a Metro officer told him Monday that anyone sleeping on the sidewalk in a group of more than three people would be arrested. Lichtenstein said this is clearly unconstitutional. The matter is likely headed to court, he said. This is an effort to disperse the homeless and drive them out, Peck said. The rising tension in the area is not going unnoticed by those who run the shelters. What happens in the next week or so is critical, Ruth Bruland, executive director of MASH Village, said. If the community slides into thinking, oh, we took care of those guys, it's not true. We didn't take care of those guys, she said. We took care of a situation, she said, but we need to change the way we're doing things. Those changes may be months off. The Southern Nevada Regional Planning Coalition is scheduled in April to discuss a five-point plan its homelessness task force has devised for addressing the issue. The plan must then be approved by the cities of Henderson, North Las Vegas, and Las Vegas, as well as Clark County.
North Las Vegas Councilwoman Stephanie Smith, a task force member, said recent events only serve to show how much a regional approach to solving the problem is needed. At least 5 years ago, I felt as if we were losing track of the bigger picture and pouring millions into building shelters in downtown Las Vegas without having asked fundamental questions like, do we know how many homeless there are? Do we know exactly what their needs are? Do we want all the shelters to be grouped in one place? Now the time has come to spend millions more on asking and surveys and consultants for these studies. Actually, she didn't quite say that. She said, now the time has come to answer those questions. It's all so much fun to do the surveys while people are being harassed and rounded up by the police. That's from the Las Vegas Sun of March 26th. And a little bit closer to home, although a bit of ways away, in Union City, on Tuesday night, while our city council was being sued, and we're going to be hearing that shortly, a little clip from that, Union City moved to clarify the sleeping ban. Council says limit on spending night in vehicles is not to punish the homeless. This is a Mercury News story. Union City council members say a new law that prohibits sleeping in cars, vans, and campers is not intended to punish the homeless or push them out of town. Certainly not. The ordinance, which will take effect in 30 days, bans people from living, sleeping, or eating in their cars for more than two consecutive hours on public and private property. Boy, they're bucking for the meanest city award. The law also makes it difficult to cook in a car or motorhome. After homeless advocates expressed concern that the ordinance targets the homeless, council members Carol Dutra Vernacci and Richard Val asked that the council delay its decision to give city staff members time to amend the law. While a majority of council members gave final approval to the ordinance Tuesday night, they asked the city staff to bring back an addendum that clarifies the law's intent. The law was designed to crack down on people who live in cars and recreational vehicles in the city's industrial district, where business owners and residents, called this the Emily Riley Law, have complained about the trash that car dwellers have leave behind and about the swirl of illegal activity, such as drug use and prostitution, that has enveloped some of the encampments. City officials say the primary impetus for the ordinance is campers who have homes elsewhere but sleep in their cars to be close to their jobs on weekdays. This is the biggest... Well, let me continue. But Dutra Vernacci said the ordinance is written in such general terms that it would give the impression that the city is out to harass homeless people. I want to be sympathetic about homelessness and not project the image that we don't care. I'll bet you don't, Dutra Vernacci said. I mean, I'll bet she wants to project that image. Folks are not happy that we're trying to push homelessness off of our streets. People caught living in their cars on a regular basis and creating a nuisance could be cited and fined up to $100. Repeat offenders could face misdemeanor charges. Interim City Attorney Michael Reback is working with Police Chief Randy Ulibarri to change the law to reflect the city's goal. We want to come back with some language that clearly expresses the council's intent that this is not directed at a societal homeless issue, Reback said. But officials acknowledge that the homeless still could be cited on a case-by-case basis if they camped out in the industrial areas. Councilmember Ben Elias said car campers have soiled the city's image. The intentions are good intentions of keeping the city clean, Elias said. We want our city to continue to get rid of blighted areas and graffiti. The police department plans to direct families caught living in their cars to homeless shelters in Fremont or Hayward rather than immediately cite them, city officials said. Which is, by the way, illegal under the ICORN decision. You can't send them to cities elsewhere in other jurisdictions. However, shelters are often full with long waiting lists. About 90 people are on a waiting list to get a shelter bed at Fremont's Sunrise Village on any given day, said Louis Chicoine, executive director of the Tri-Cities Homeless Coalition. Dutra Vernacci and Chicoine plan to meet in the next few weeks to discuss other alternatives for Union City homeless. The ordinance also applies to travelers who park overnight at the Walmart parking lot in Union Landing Shopping Center. However, temporary campers could get a $5 parking permit that would allow them to stay for a limited time. This is a Mercury News story from today's Mercury News. And obviously, it's an anti-homeless law that they don't want to acknowledge as anti-homeless because that makes them legally liable and also is a bad image kind of thing. So they're claiming all these pretexts that ignore the reality that they are criminalizing the only shelter that some homeless people lucky enough to have cars have up in Union City. What we're going to do now, and we're kind of running short of time, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, by the way, and that's at 96.3 FM, We're going to play a little bit from the City Council of Tuesday, and very briefly, here's what happened at City Council on Tuesday, at least from my vantage point. In the afternoon, I had written Mayor Crone a letter saying that I wished to be able to speak on a number of consent agenda items. These are items you pull off the consent agenda. Normally, they pass them all at once in a big block, but if you pull them off, the items are discussed separately and voted on separately by the council. Customarily, an item is pulled off either by a council member or a member of the public, and then that individuals are given 3 minutes to speak on that item. Occasionally, it's less, 2 minutes, but usually it's 3 minutes. In the past, I have been differentially treated here, so that I was told by Mayor Fitzmaurice I could only speak for 2 minutes on the items I pulled off. Then I was told that the next council meeting I could only speak for 1 minute on each of the items. And finally, he cut me down to 30 seconds per item. Crone, who we had hoped would be a more tolerant mayor, who would not engage in these kinds of selective violations of the public's right to have input into the city council's business, and it's particularly around homeless issues. You see, they don't want to hear about homeless issues, and that's what this is really about. And they certainly don't want to hear me on homeless issues. And they don't want to be embarrassed for realizing that for the public's realizing they're not doing anything on homeless issues. They're refusing to address long-standing problems like the sleeping ban that criminalizes sleeping outside in Santa Cruz from 11 to 8:30 in the morning and essentially makes 90% of the population into criminals every night. And more important, the people who have to go to unsafe places to sleep and can't sleep in groups and can't set up tents against the elements and have no legal place to go. So the consent agenda on May 26th, 2 days ago, I'd written Mayor Crone a letter which essentially asked him, said, look, I really don't want to bother to come to city council meeting unless you're going to guarantee 3 minutes for items on the consent agenda, and then there was another request for items at the public hearing, the second reading of the so-called camping ban corrections, which I'll talk about in a moment. Crone left me a message on the phone, sure, you'll have 3 minutes, that's fine, no problem. When I got to City Council, I was told I would have a 5-minute total for 4 items, and I would be forced to talk about all those items together. So I'd have 1 minute and 15 seconds per item. I would be put into a special ghetto situation where I was treated unlike other people who would talk on items separately and individually, and where those items could be discussed by the council or other members of the public who wanted to join in. No. I was to talk on all 4 items at once, in a rushed fashion, all together, and in such a way as actually prejudiced me in front of the public and in front of the council, because it made it look like I was such a difficult individual that there had to be special rules made up to deal with me. Now, this is unconstitutional. It abridges freedom of speech. It abridges the Brown Act, the right to be present at public meetings and get fair time to speak. And hopefully it's going to be a part of this lawsuit, which actually was what the main thing on the agenda for me. It wasn't on the council agenda, but it was on, I think, the agenda of all the rest of us at the evening session. At the evening session, we had a little press conference where the two attorneys who were filing this lawsuit, Kate Wells and David Beauvais, announced the lawsuit had been filed in federal court. And what you're going to hear now is James Ney serving the lawsuit. And the lawsuit, in essence, is a 7-page document which describes civil rights violations by the council, and it particularly refers to my making the silent Heil Crone salute when Crone cut off Susan Zeman from Oral Communications on March 12th, and we've talked about it on the air. If you want more information, actually want to see this, you can see it on the web, on the internet, and the website to go to, grab a pencil, is pretty easy to remember, but grab a pencil and here's how you go. You go to www.santacruz, small letters, one word, santacruz.indymedia, I-N-D-Y-M-E-D-I-A, indymedia.org, and you'll be able to see the whole Crone salute, and you'll also be able to see the actual visual side of the tape I'm about to play for you, which is activist James Ney serving the city council with papers, interrupted by council member Sugar, who keeps trying to stop him from doing that, and then interrupted by Mayor Crone, who tries to have it, demands he leave the chambers. He refuses repeatedly to leave, and the council backs down. Of course they're backing down. They're being called on their unconstitutional behavior, and they're being hauled into federal court. Anyway, here is the lawsuit being served at City Council.
Mayor, City Council. I came here, I had a speech written over your decorum and your efforts to stifle speech through certain members of your audience that you choose that you don't like, or because you don't like their style of speech. But instead I get a much, much more pleasurable duty tonight. My duty tonight begins with you, Mr. Sugar. Mr. Sugar, you are served in federal court. Mr. Jim Fitzmaurice, you are served in federal court. Miss Emily Riley, you are served in federal court. Mayor Christopher Crone, you are served in federal court. Mr. Ed Warner, you are served in federal court.
Thank you all very much for your time, and I will give the rest of my time to the rest of the people.
Thank you. There, of course, is that it would be nice if you council members were courteous enough to live up to your own rules and not interrupt people when they're speaking. And Crone then orders him to leave the room, and you'll hear that. You also hear voices from the back shouting, "You leave," and that was the voice of Scott Graham, an activist who was suggesting the council. It's time for the council to leave the room and possibly the scene.
Did you please leave?
Why? Why did he leave?
Right.
Why?
You leave.
With his rules and you interrupted him.
You leave.
I didn't interrupt you. You interrupted
him. There was a point of order by a council member. We didn't take any time away from you speaking.
What's the point of order?
Could you please leave the chambers, Mr. Sugar?
The point of order was simply the oral communication. It's an opportunity to address items not on the agenda and not to serve legal process or make other statements.
Thank you. You've been warned twice. Next speaker.
So Mayor Sugar was again attempting one of his peculiar free speech restrictions, and Crone immediately backed him up by, without even asking for a vote of the city council, by saying simply, directing the member of the public to leave. So apparently in Crone's eyes, because I experienced the same thing 2 weeks ago when I was directed to leave for, again, silently giving a brief Sieg Heil salute by Fitzmaurice, the council is always right and the public is always wrong. It's really the wrong approach taken. It's particularly humorous because here the public is realizing it doesn't have to leave. It should stand up and stay. It should sit down and be a part of the whole process there and ignore the unconstitutional and illegal demands of Mayor Crone and his cronies. It's just, you know, that he can make all the protestations he wants. He has free speech. Let him order 100 people to leave. That's fine. But let's get on with the business of the meeting.
Speaker is not on. Please turn on the mic.
Thank you. www.sandcruz.indymedia.org.
Start again.
For those of you at home interested to see a video clip of the incident in question, please look up www.santacruz.indymedia.org. Just make a decision for yourself. Render your own opinion. My name is Gregory Uba. I've expressed concern with the meanness of the city previously in an open letter distributed at City Council. I've read about the mean streets both in Santa Cruz and in the LA Times. I've witnessed it firsthand, however, I do not feel that my personal opinions have been given much weight. Therefore, I did a little research. And in comparison, the Santa Cruz and five area counties surrounding Santa Cruz, and that's the information going around from the U.S. Census Bureau site, had the following information. And these are percentage statistics and not numerical statistics. Santa Cruz County, last of six counties in black or African persons. Next to last in six counties in Asian persons. Last in mixed race persons. Fourth of six in household median income. Next to the most persons living below poverty. Next to the most children living below poverty, with over 21% of Santa Cruz County children living below the level of poverty. Last of the six counties in minority-owned firms and last in the six counties in women-owned firms. In the comparison of UC Santa Cruz and UC Riverside, two campuses whose undergraduate enrollments are within 10% of each other, UC Santa Cruz has one-third the number of Asian students. UC Santa Cruz has 13.4% Latino Chicano compared to 21.7% at UCR. And UC Riverside has 2.5 times as many African or black identified students. Call it what you will. Call it white privilege or the wrongful assumption that the dominant culture is value neutral. But a child poverty rate, which is 1 in 5 children, can hardly be considered.
Thank you, sir. Next speaker.
Can I be timed when I begin, please?
This is Becky Johnson beginning her speech. She was her time was cut short to 1.5 minutes, and it was also interrupted. She was trying to video most of this, and it is thanks to her video work that we have on the website santacruz.indymedia.org, www.santacruz.indymedia.org, a visual record of what happened there. The actual minutes of my arrest of 2 weeks before at City Council was excised from the record. That's something I failed to mention. One of the four items that Crone forced me to rush through with only a 5-minute period to speak about them was a correction of the minutes, and I tried to add to the fact that the council had essentially ordered me arrested, which has provoked this lawsuit, which is going to take all of them into federal court. It has taken all of them into federal court. And by the way, the next thing we're waiting for is them to file a response, and I'll be talking about that response, and then we'll be, of course, filing the documentation that this one arrest of me is only one of a whole series of incidents where they've cut people off, cut back time, excluded people from the chambers, denied people the right to respond when they were mentioned by name, excluded people from oral communications discriminatively and selectively, and so forth. Anyway, here's Becky Johnson speaking on March 26th at the City Council.
Go ahead, please.
I'm 15 minutes past. Can you restart the clock, please?
Go ahead, please.
The clock has not restarted.
In December of 1999, a small group of homeless advocates began lobbying a campaign to end the sleeping ban. We urged this council and then Mayor Tim Fitzmaurice to put the sleeping ban on the agenda for discussion and ultimately for repeal. We called our effort the City Hall Coffee Clutch and Tag Team Teach-In. Our effort was to provide a lawful yet steady pressure on the council to end this law that makes it illegal for homeless people to sleep at night or to cover themselves with blankets. For up to 4 hours each business day, we went to Tim Fitzmaurice's office and attempted to meet with him to discuss placing the sleeping ban on the City Council agenda. On December 21st, we learned that 41 homeless people had died on the streets in the previous year. What did the council do? On December 26th, they served myself and two others with a restraining order, preventing us from attending council meetings. It's estimated the city spent $12,000 pursuing us with this nuisance suit, which ended up being thrown out of court in June by Judge Stevens for lacking merit. This illustrates the lengths this council will go to silence homeless advocates. This pattern and practice must end. Restore the proper position of the public involvement in city business conducted at these meetings. The public input is nothing to be endured. You've shown disgraceful partisanship, depending on whether the speaker was talking about homeless issues or perhaps an issue you feel less guilty about.
Thank you very much. Next speaker.
Good evening, Council Mayor. My name is Linda Lee Master, and I'm going to read you a message from an attorney. Based on the facts you supply, this is written to a friend of mine, in the attached newspaper story, the council members participating in these actions taken against Silver and Morse and the incidents described as well as the peace officers involved, have opened themselves up to personal non-immune damages liability, independent of the liability of the city. And unless the officers' behavior is repudiated by corrective training, the sheriff's department as well. In a civil action brought under the Federal Civil Rights Act, the officer's only protection, it would seem to me, is if they did not see the disruption but were told about it and, under the circumstances, had no basis for doubting what they were told. I don't know where the city attorney has been in these episodes, but I'm astounded that this is permitted, if only because of the serious legal exposure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And that was Linda LeMaster, former chair of the Homeless Issues Task Force, reading a letter from Terry Frank of the First Amendment Coalition. I think I have the name right, maybe not. And a bit more from the oral communications of March 26th.
My name is Thomas Levitt. I'm a former member of the city's Homeless Issues Task Force, appointed by the mayor himself, and chair of the city's Living Wage Committee. Tonight, the civil rights of over 2,000 homeless citizens are being violated because the City Council has refused to implement the recommendations of the task force I served on. Speaking out on this issue has historically led to homeless advocates being silenced, evicted, and arrested. I may also be arrested. This is not because I enjoy sitting in jail. It is simply because I believe in freedom of speech and civil rights for homeless people. Last meeting, a homeless citizen and advocate of this city was evicted from this meeting and arrested for engaging in a nonviolent, non-disruptive statement of dissent.
At this point, Thomas Levitt raised his hand in a Nazi salute to the city council, doing exactly what I did last week, or 2 weeks before. The council did nothing.
Repeat this act. It is radical dissent that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights was designed to protect. And it is radical dissent on the issue of homelessness, very specifically against which the City Council has engaged in a pattern of illegally using police force to suppress in violation of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Mayor Christopher Cron, Tim Fitzmaurice, Ed Porter, Keith Sugar, and Emily Riley have all spoken against this sleeping ban prior to being actually elected. And yet this violation of the core human right of sleep continues to be violated. Tim Fitzmaurice said the dignity of the council was offended by a simple gesture. Well, I think the council has no dignity. No dignity as long as people do not have a safe and legal place to sleep. Which is more offensive? This...
And here he raises his hand in a Nazi salute, and he goes through a series of other gestures, such as he gives the finger, he also puts up a clenched fist. The council does nothing.
Michael Blanton being beaten to death on the riverbank of the San Lorenzo River. This, or Boxcar Billy dying in a carport of hypothermia. This, or Ray Stitch dying, drowning in the river. These were all homeless people. Thank you very much.
Wells. I was on the school board in SoCal for 14 years, and during that tenure I was chair of the board five times. And during that time I was variously referred to as a Nazi and a communist, personally referred to me. Did I like it? Of course not. Criticism publicly directed at an individual or a body such as yourselves is embarrassing and makes one uncomfortable. No matter how much one feels that it's undeserved. However, unlike you, not once in that 14 years did I ever curtail a public speaker during that time, no matter how much it hurt, because I recognized the higher good of a free exchange of ideas. I recognized my role as a public servant. The person responsible for shaping this philosophy in me and my hero in life is a Jewish gentleman by the name of Francis Heisler, who I had the benefit of having as a constitutional law professor. In his earlier life, he happened to be head of the ACLU when the Nazis were denied a permit to march in Skokie, Illinois. So they, of course, came to him as head of the ACLU. And And this man made the difficult decision not only to represent this group, but to win the case. He took it to heart. He's dead now, and unfortunately, he's not resting in peace, looking down at this body who puts themselves above the people that they serve. Were you surprised that that Santa Cruz was named the meanest, one of the meanest cities in the state? Maybe if you had been listening to the people who were talking to you, the measure of your worth as a governing body is not how well you listen and take note of a person who praises you, but how well you listen and consider the ideas of those who are critical of you.
And that was oral communications at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of two nights ago, where the City Council was served with legal papers in federal court for violations of basic First Amendment rights of homeless activists like myself at City Council, in an attempt to get the courts to force the City Council to open up its process to restore the rights of free speech at City Council, the right of people to have the appropriate amount of time to speak, the right of people not to be ejected or be in fear of being ejected from council meetings, to be right of them not to be interrupted, a whole series of concerns. And I really want to take my hat off to Kate Wells and David Beauvais, the attorneys who stepped forward to do this on their own funds, I might add. And thank you very much. They apparently felt it was an issue that was sufficiently pressing. Now we needed someone, and I guess it's going to cost 10 times as much to go after the rights of homeless people outside. But if we can get this one down, maybe the council will start to have to respond to these deals as people come to City Council, as we come to the summit on May 3rd and 4th, and people start setting up camp paradises and encampments and banding together and using the necessity defense. That's what we need to realize. It's not going to be through the councils doing something. It's going to be through the community doing something. Now, earlier today, I took about a half an hour's worth of tape down at Yuppie Planter, including an acrimonious discussion with Sushi Now owner Matisse Selman, as well as Ali Ka calling the police on a man for sitting on the public planter inside the privatized zone when there was nobody else in the entire area, when he'd actually purchased something from New Leaf, where he felt he was a friend of one of the owners, and so he could do it, but this other owner didn't want him there. And it's a very interesting discussion. And I tried to give equal time to bunches of people involved, but now I find I have no time to play any of that. And I was accused of being a liar and eliminating things from my radio show in order to censor people. I don't do that, and so I'm not going to play any of it today. But when I return on Sunday at the 3.5 hour show, because this show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, which you're listening to, does return on Sunday at 10 o'clock in the morning and goes until 1:30, I will play the entire episode without any kind of censorship. And I'll even try to do it without commentary, though that may be more difficult. And I would tell Matisse Selman, if he's listening, Ali Ka, the owners of the two cafes that have privatized and made Hippie Planter Yuppie Planter, and actually made it a sort of a foreboding, forbidden zone where there are very few people that I've seen when I've gone down there. Of course, it was not that pleasant a day today, so perhaps today is not a good example. I tell those gentlemen, I also tell folks who are listening in who wanted to hear this, that it's going to be played on Sunday. And I even set a time. It'll be played at 11 o'clock, from 11 probably to about 11:30. So that's a time certain. I will play that section, 11 o'clock on Sunday. That'll be coming up, I guess, the 31st, I guess it is. Sunday, March 31st, at 11 o'clock in the morning. That entire segment. And it's quite an interesting segment. It kind of runs over some of the older arguments, but it got very heated. At one point, Matisse Selman actually took the tape recorder out of my hand, refused to give it back to me, told me to call the police. I said, let's not do that. And eventually he thought better of his action, gave me back the tape recorder. And though we disagree and are quite angry with each other for what has happened, I think nonetheless the dialogue, such as it is, continues. My point of view at that planter has always been these business owners need to get together, not just with the kids, but with the community, and sit down and work out some guidelines and try them out. And not simply wall off half the sidewalk and turn it into their private backyard. That's just not the way to go, particularly when the obvious purpose is to target a particular class of people. And they've refused to do this, hence I continue to urge people not only to boycott Sushi and Alibaba's Cafe and New Leaf Market, but also to tell them on every possible occasion, have you decided to put this matter up for mediation yet? And if you haven't, I'm still not going to buy one bit of sushi from you, or one falafel, or, you know, whatever they sell at New Leaf Market that folks find so appetizing. Actually, I used to be quite a patron of at least two of the three stores. So, we're nearing the end of Bathurst Pier's broadsides. We've got about 8 minutes to go here, and before the infamous Uncle Dennis arrives with the cream, from the cream to the dregs, a little a nice change of pace from my endless blather on the air. I'm sure that be an opportunity to take a breather.
Thankfully, it's not endless.
Well, and we get a little commentary as well as music, I'm afraid, but I guess that goes with the territory. But a couple more things before we leave. I was able finally, after 2 weeks, to get Christopher Crone's emails. Normally, the city council, anything that city council members send out to the public is required to be open to the public and public inspection. But for some reason, they didn't have this available for the last 2 weeks. They finally had it available the day after we served the lawsuit. And what I have here are a series of emails from Crone in response to concerns. For example, David Silva writes to Mayor Crone, "Chris, Your Honor, the Santa Cruz City Council needs to stop harassment of activists by arresting, threatening, and expelling them by using spurious decorum concerns to avoid real issues such as the right to sleep at night." To which Crone sends out this generic email, which went out to all the other people who asked similar questions. "Thank you for your email. I have attached the rules for conducting city council meetings in regards to oral communications. While it is quite upsetting to have to ask anybody to leave council chambers, if someone is disrupting the meeting and council members request that the mayor ask someone to leave, it is part of council policy to follow up on that request. This is necessary because we have city business to conduct and we have other agenda items to cover. Mr. Norris was asked to leave 3 times to leave the council chambers for giving a Nazi salute. He was given the choice of to either leave or face arrest. He chose to be arrested. I hope this email answers your concerns and clarifies the process involved." And he also includes the decorum rules, which include the following statements. "While the council is in session, all persons shall preserve order and decorum. Any person making personal, impertinent, or slanderous remarks or becoming boisterous shall be barred by the presiding officer from further attendance at said meeting unless permission for continued attendance is granted by a majority vote of the council." It also says, "Under the instructions of the presiding officer shall be the duty of the sergeant at arms or any police officer present to eject from city council chambers any person in the audience who uses boisterous or profane language or language tending to bring the council or any council member into contempt, or any person who interrupts and refuses to keep quiet or take a seat in order to do so by the presiding officer or otherwise disrupts the proceedings of the council." These are clearly, of course, unconstitutional rules because they go to the content of speech. They don't go to the idea that, yeah, you surely have the right to have a non-disrupted meeting, but you don't have the right to restrict the content of the speech that comes before you. And that's why these rules are being taken to court to be struck down in this federal lawsuit, and why we're seeking damages, because these council members should have known these rules are unconstitutional. It's been brought to their attention repeatedly before. Again, if you want to see what actually happened at City Council, you can go to the website of Indy Media, and that's at www.santacruz.indymedia.org, and you can get some videotapes that were actually made of this, of the incident where I was arrested and thrown out. Again, an incident that was covered up by City Council. It does not appear in their minutes. The incident was struck from the minutes of City Council 2 days ago when they corrected their minutes and removed any mention of it other than the fact that I was asked to leave. Apparently, I may be asked to leave in a moment as well by Uncle Dennis, and but that'll be on live on the air, so we can do something about that, can't we, folks? Well, we'll see about that. Anyway, if you want to join me again, I will be back on Sunday, and between times, I can be reached at 423-HUFF. HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Huff also meets every Wednesday if you want to join us at 8:30 in the morning at Baker Square, 1107 Ocean Street. And we're putting together the Homeless Activist Summit, which looks like it's going to be pretty interesting. Plus, a quick news flash for you. You may remember I was arrested about a month or two ago for tabling on the sidewalk in front of New Leaf Market. Again, Matisse Selman issued a citizen's complaint, and Butchie Baker eagerly enforced it by taking me off to the police station in handcuffs, and the charge was blocking the sidewalk. It's a bogus charge. If we have an attorney, and we may have, that may be taken into a civil lawsuit. The charges were, of course, dropped. Another woman was arrested with me. Her name was Zoe Einbinder. Charges against her were dropped, but she faces trial tomorrow in Superior Court for the infraction charges of displaying her merchandise, which was little kind of jewelry items where she had them off to the side on the sidewalk. This kind of harassment is the kind of stuff that I think we need to stand up against. And she herself is really very, wants to be very low profile about it. I, on the other hand, take the view that this is an assault on the public's right, particularly poor people, to do what they need to do on the streets. And if it's non-disruptive, it shouldn't be prohibited and it shouldn't be harassed. So come on down tomorrow, 10 a.m. at 701 Ocean Street, that's the courthouse, and look for Zoe Einbinder, E-I-N-B-I-N-D-E-R, E-I-N-B-I-N-D-E-R. She's on the calendar. Let's watch what happens in court. Let's be supportive of her. She herself, and more important, supportive of the right of others like her who are getting hassled, whether it's Cosmic Chris, the musician, who's getting a trespass ticket for being in the alcove of Jackson's shoes, and then being harassed for playing at Borders, even when he has permission to be there, even when the manager has given him permission. Sergeant McPhillips then goes and says, that's not good enough, we want to go to the district manager. We got to change this kind of stuff, folks. So I'm going to pass the flame here to Uncle Dennis. I can put on a little tape if you'd like, Dennis, if you want me to cover that. We're going to do a bit of the Poets Project, which we've heard a bit of in the last few shows. It's from Poor Magazine, really a great series of readings. We'll start with Woman by Bhikkhu, and that is number 14. Get that on track. And away we go.
Womb in. I am that womb in that screams, tells lies, schizophrenic, psychopath, shooting needles, walking the block, confused, tainted by poverty and violence, abused and abuser, mind, body, rape for 508 years. Demanding needs never met, I am that womb in who, silenced by your need to speak, waits for you patiently, working quietly with half the answers, raising his, mine, and their children, doing mine and your work. Quiet is my name, silence is my game. Me and silence go way back. Not all the way back, no. Before silence and I, there was me, that womb in shooting arrows, given birth, creation remedies, praising wise ones and new ones, connecting with universes unseen, lighting tainted paths with colorful stars that burn hatred into infinity. Divine, that bruja, that witch, that womb in, woman I am, that womb in, trapped in the body of a man. I feel her and see her, but no one else. She loves and feels creation, that of a womb in. She is there, trapped in the life of a man. Reveal, reflect, drag queen, long-legged, yet I am still that woman. Woman, womb in, womb in. Maybe I love other women. Maybe I want to kiss hot lips, suck clitoris, lie down, talk, and be with other womb-ins. Yes, I am that woman, still a womb-in. Woman like me, learning to be free, spiritually, mentally, and physically, waiting to see, do you feel me? Exposed, bare, soul, full force, ready to be born again, soar and relax. My spirit is rising. My spirit is rising. Outside the classroom, beyond these buildings, past the smog, the ignorance, the hate, the silence, the history. I'm leaving this plane above all that is physical. I am that woman. Me, woman, still remain here, ancestor. Remember, we are. I am that woman.
We finna break this system down. Searching